Today's program is brought to you by Whole Foods Market, a dynamic leader in the quality food business, a mission-driven company that aims to set the standards of excellence for food retailers. For more information, visit wholefoodsmarket.com.
Hi, this is Celia Kutcher, host of Animal Instinct, and you are listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey, hey, you're listening to Eat Your Words and Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Kathy Irway, and we're back from a brief little vacation where I did some book touring. And I'm so excited to have my guests on today are Patrick Martins and Mike Edson, who wrote a book. It is the Carnivore's Manifesto. They're also, well, Patrick is the founder of Heritage Radio Network and Heritage Foods USA. Mike is the host of the Mike and Judy Show here on Heritage. And so, you know, we've got some veteran radio show folks and food folks.
How many years of radio are in this room right now? So I'm six.
Five and a half. Five.
Just right here on the show. I think today is episode 160 for us.
Cool.
So we're still kind
of
like
11. That's almost 16 years of radio. Wow.
There we
that's
go.
Impressive.
Yeah. And you and you
an
got
actual
books.
Human experience between you and I, Patrick? Hundreds.
Hundreds.
How many books under our belts collectively now?
Oh, that's a good question, too. Well, congratulations on your book.
Mazel tov. Yeah, well, I wrote 28 pornographic novels before I went legit. That's
and magazines,
true.
Too.
Magazines, but yeah, the porn, you know, I mean, Cindy's Brutal Ordeal, Rich Man Sex Toys, a Cynthia Class Virgin, those were mine.
No, let's say honest
very
to
versatile
God books.
Renaissance folks
but,
here.
This was my only one. The only other books I was affiliated with were those slow food restaurant guides, but I just edited them.
Patrick has now officially written more books than he has read.
Well, this
yes,
is,
that's true.
You know, if you're going to do one book, you know, it is a manifesto. It is so important, too.
Are you calling me a communist?
No. Well, that's what it's called.
Yeah.
Okay. It has a juicy piece of steak on a fork. You know, it's a very defiant book, and it's a very authoritative book. And only, you know, you two could write this because you've been so close to these issues for so long. I want to talk
that's
a
very
little.
Well put. Thank
that's,
you.
Yeah. You know, you sounded like Princess Leia there, like in Star Wars when she says, "Vader, only you could be so bold." And that's it, Patrick. Only you could be so bold.
I like that you
also,
say
Patrick
authoritative.
Also, Patrick is my father.
I will chop off your arm if you keep talking.
Did this happen when Carlo Petrini and Alice Waters were here? Okay, because I want to talk a little bit about the impact of this book, because I rarely get guests on who have a book that has been out for almost a year now. And you guys did some extensive touring. So in the year since, we had Alice Waters and Carlo Petrini come here for a special just live event here at Heritage.
To celebrate the 25th anniversary of the founding of Slow Food.
It was amazing. You can listen to that on heritageradionetwork.org. And we also saw some, you know, some changes in the food world. I want to talk a little bit about insights you've learned through this book, impact that we've seen. I can just say in the last year, you know, we saw McDonald's vow to use only antibiotic-free chicken in the future. That's an interesting.
Great achievement for all mankind, almost. When McDonald's makes a move like that, that's just a good thing.
Yeah, it's a step in the right direction. What I gleaned from a lot of the book stuff you're writing in the book is that, you know, it's not about making an overnight change or being the perfect consumer.
Right.
It's about applauding the right steps in the right direction.
I had three bacon, egg, and cheese sandwiches this morning. I have no idea where the bacon's from, nor do I want to know.
It's really good to know that.
Well, no, it's true. To every life, a Snickers bar must fall. You know, a club sandwich of turkey of unknown origin. It's going to happen. We live in New York. It's just not practical to try to live in some hippie utopia of 100% organic. It's just not going to happen.
And this is a practical manifesto for the everyday, you know, person right now. So I wanted to hear, like, what you think were some of the most important steps that you've seen that you want to applaud. It doesn't have to be in the last year, maybe the last 5 years or so.
Oh, that's a good question. I mean, Some of the things that most excite me. Well, I like that Little Brown gave me this book opportunity.
Uh-huh.
The word tetoir was officialized. It's the terroir of the mind. Tetoir, that's French for head. And so there's also knowledge in people and in skills and in hands and in the artisan.
Of course.
And that art form usually transfers from one artist directly to another. That's hands-on. You can't really, we could, I suppose, learn it in a book. But so that's why, you know, when we became an industrialized society, we basically severed so many, I think, millennial lines of building, carpentry, and all this stuff that got broken.
Right.
The people who did it are still alive, though, and I think there's like a renaissance in appreciating those old, simple skills.
That is fantastic. Tetoir.
It is, as terroir is to the land, tetoir is to the mind.
Mm-hmm.
But Patrick said, it's really a cultural breeding ground and an intellectual breeding ground. And certainly here in Brooklyn, USA, New York City, I mean, there's more, you know, talent here probably per square foot than any place in the world. And I mean, certainly there's a tetoir here at Roberta's.
Yes, absolutely. And I think a lot of times it's not about something happening and for, you know, a big thing. It's just something continuing to grow. And I think the Brooklyn food scene and young people opening just to make a vodka or just to make a cocktail bar or just to make a delicious homegrown bagel, you know, or ice cream. You know, I kind of think that there's a return almost to the Little House on the Prairie. Do one thing really well.
True.
You'll carve out a niche, you know, in a life or a family or a few families even. And that's
inspire
enough.
Other people while you're doing it. Yeah, so it's not about like this lightning bolt moment and a transformation, but like...
It's not like a lotto winner. It's just that this movement's growing. There's more food trucks. I mean, when I toured around with Carlo, we would have real trouble knowing where to go in a lot of small towns in Arkansas. Now, every university town has a legitimate, you know, Michelin-rateable even restaurant. There's
totally
in all these little towns, and I think a lot has happened since Slow Food started and Chez Panisse.
And I see, you know, I see that in restaurant menus more and more, like sharing the origins of ingredients or the terroir, leading to more tetoir, hopefully.
Yes,
a
exactly.
growing consciousness.
They cross-pollinate.
Yeah. So what was it like on the road? Were you speaking with a lot of people that were very new to these concepts? Were you... What was it like? How did people receive this book?
We went into a tough zone to talk about national issues.
So you went inside McDonald's and held conferences now.
Even worse, Portland.
Yeah, I played my guitar inside a butcher shop.
Okay.
Anyway, you also, we spoke at a Russian Orthodox, a Greek Orthodox monastery.
Serbian
Orthodox.
Serbian Orthodox.
We both bought an image there, remember?
Saint Seraphim, of course.
Who could talk to the animals. Bears walked with him.
That's right. And we played Frisbee with the priest. This was a good tour. This was not your average book tour.
Did you guys have fun?
Was this your I have fun everywhere I go, Kathy.
Yeah, that's what it seems like. You know, you guys infuse a lot of like energy into a topic that could be just like, it seems like, you know, very scholarly, but you take a totally different approach.
I think, you know, part of the idea, the concept of this book, and Patrick and I both are fortunate enough to sort of have inherited some of the counterculture of the 1960s. And we're, you know, we like pranksterism and we like, you know, we like to have fun. We think that being positive and, you know, this is not supposed to be homework.
Mm-hmm.
And if you really want people to get tuned in, it should be fun. It doesn't necessarily need to be so silly and so far out that we don't get taken seriously, which is the, you know, absurd end result of a lot of protest movements. But absolutely, this was sort of a magical meat tour. That's how we kind of wanted to get people, you know, on board with us. And it works. I mean, why not? A little music, a little song, a little dance.
It's a little Comedy Central, you know, but it's talking about a very important issue. I mean, the book was basically, you know, people are always asking the same question. Should we eat meat? Shouldn't we eat meat? And the answer is we do. You know, people say, what are the about the negative environmental consequences? We're eating the meat anyway. Even if we ate half, it would still be a tremendous amount. You know, a lot of people ask, can this type of farming feed the world?
Right.
And Michael Pollan's answer to that question is the current system is not, you know, feeding the entire world.
So
people
why?
Are starving. So why are we being asked to answer such a long-term, massive, and cosmic question when we're just talking about one success story at a time? So, you know, we wanted to write a book for, one, like the disciples of Peter Singer. You know, he was the greatest vegetarian manifesto ever written. He wrote Animal Liberation. Mm-hmm. He was basically against factory farming and experimentation on animals. So it turned a lot of people into vegetarians.
Yeah.
But now, 30 years later, with small family farms and dairies that have male goats and all these kind of organic, beautiful things, we need to find a way. How do we embrace that?
Right.
Also knowing that we slaughter 10 billion livestock.
That was an amazing quote. Yeah.
That's a lot.
10 billion animals just for America.
So I think the best way to eat less meat is to avidly throw yourself into local farms, heritage breeds, and spend more money. I mean, we have to get over the fact, you know, no one should be tacitly defending the dollar value meal at McDonald's. That's not a good thing. Cheap meat is not good for anyone, and they shouldn't be eating meat then. Fruits and vegetables, those types of staples, grains, that's a different story. We're just speaking for meat.
What about supply? Oh, go ahead, Mike.
Well, I was going to say, you know, we have this great one-star review on Amazon. That's very, I know the guy would have given us like negative 20 stars had they would have let us. But the guy says, I bought this book because I needed something to club my vegan friends over the head with to convince them why they should eat meat. And I found nothing of that sort in this book. Well, and it goes on. There's a great review. It goes on. It must be a 3,000 word review. It's really incredible. It's incredible. It's longer than like any single chapter, any single five chapters in our book.
But we don't try to get anyone
exactly.
To eat meat.
That's not our thing. That's not our mission. We eat meat, and
that's why that cover
very smart for Patrick to co-opt that and own that really right at the beginning. We eat meat, and that's not going to be the conversation. The conversation is how do we do it better? How do we, as people who do eat meat, how do we improve our lives? And if the only alternative were to eat factory farmed meat and animals that were treated cruelly and jacked to the fucking teeth with chemicals, then maybe vegetarianism would be our choice as well.
Actually, maybe this is the greatest vegetarian manifesto ever written because it's anti-factory farming.
Right. I'm just surprised that somebody would not respond to that. Somebody who was looking for whatever he was looking for to prove to his vegan friends. I mean,
I'll be honest with you. I think part of it is there's a big slab of meat on the cover of this book, and it's a bit caveman for my taste, to be honest with you.
Yeah, we would actually have chosen a smaller portion. Some
sauerkraut, maybe a better cut.
Kimchi.
But it just seems it screams kind of like this caveman kind of XY testosterone, kind of meat vibe, which is not what
it
should have really
been
about.
A disciple of Peter Singer's. You know, I work with Dave. I'm honored to work with Dave on the Museum of Food and Drink. Mm-hmm. And I got to meet Peter Singer at one of these panels. And he said to me that our farming is, if that was the way people ate meat, he probably wouldn't think that he wouldn't even have a farming chapter. He would just have had a chapter almost on the, experimentation for shampoo and things like that. So to hear that from Peter Singer, that 99% of what he fights for is answered by this type of farming. Mm-hmm. We shouldn't get bogged down by chatty Cathy's, no offense. No, just, who just talk about
a
solution.
Yeah.
But, we need to actually get adamantly into things. And I'm amazed, and Mike and I were talking about this, no great entrepreneur is like opening 5 slaughterhouses in the Bronx for the entire local food scene. You don't really hear about that in any city. And that's always struck me as strange that there's so little investment in the biggest bottleneck of the meat world.
Yeah.
In some ways, it's as far as inside baseball we really get with sustainable food is slaughterhouses, which is a problem. There aren't enough slaughterhouses, which Patrick said is a bottleneck. But largely, this book is not so detailed. It's not if you want to start a farm. It's not what this book is either. I mean, most of the things I'm not going to start a slaughterhouse, Patrick. But,
although there is a letter to a farmer.
But there is a letter to a farmer. But there's also a chapter written by a goat and another one written by
a goat.
A foul-mouthed goat.
That's right.
I read the audio book for the Carnivore's Manifesto. Uh-huh. And of course, I did have to read the cow and the voice of the cow.
By the way, Ted Turner, he did that kind of stuff. But the goat's real obnoxious. I'm the animal behind your Fifth Avenue cashmere, which grows under my chinny chin chin. Did you ever wonder where that mohair sweater comes from? That Ma Bit of Couture that keeps you warm and looking sharp in the winter? I am your farm's MVP. I'm famous for helping other animals.
Yep.
I can break out of a barn during a fire because I paid attention during the safety presentation and remembered where the exits are. The rest of the animals rely on me to save their sorry butts.
That's really good, actually.
My breeds are famous and noble and honorable and celebrated, yeah. And this is the heritage food side of it. These are the breeds of goat that exist. Arapa, San Clemente, Tennessee Fainting, Nigerian Dwarf, Oberhasli, La Mancha, Nubian, Toggenburg, Sayin, Pygmy, Kiko, Scandinavian Ridgeback Mountain, and Boar. Like, that's a real patrimony, and we always kind of joke, and I know your show does do recipes, but, like, the world needs more
goat breeds, varieties, yeah.
Yeah, or breed-specific descriptors of their mm-hmm. tastes and their purpose and their seasons and how they're best treated, you know, versus recipes. We need to be looking at the ingredient of the meat. We can't just call it meat. Mm-hmm. We should be saying you need the Katahdin lamb leg because it's very light and low in lanolin, and it, you know, it's to be eaten in March or April, you know, and that way people seek it out.
You see, look at the New York Times, and you see, you know, Mark Bittner, whoever it is, you see a recipe by someone who is supposedly enlightened, mm-hmm. and it just says, you know, 1/4 pound, you know, chuck, or
chuck,
like,
yeah,
or like,
yeah.
or like 12-ounce skirt steak with no indication.
Yeah, is it grass fed? Is it Piedmontese? Like, is like, it tender?
Don't go
it...
to Met Food and buy it there because it's not going to be good.
God is so limited.
You know, all
too,
skirt steaks are not created equal.
Yeah. And also local farms. They could name the farm it is. I mean, if they go mm-hmm. to the Meat Hook or Dixon's Farm Stand Meats, those are all great. And they say, we get it from, you know, whatever, Foster
right.
Farm.
The information is there somewhere, but it's just totally not.
And chickens.
Not for meat,
freaking
only
right.
for vegetables.
And you're talking mm-hmm. about McDonald's, you know, making that move, which is great. But it's actually relatively easy to, I mean, a lot of supermarkets, I mean, it's neighborhood supermarkets, not, you know, fancier food or boutique-y, you know, grocery shops. You can get a decent, you know, chicken Murray's locally. I like the Murray's chicken, you know, but you don't have to get Purdue. There are more alternatives.
Yeah, just don't do Purdue.
Oh, God,
and anyone
so
who
gross.
Argues...
Yeah. Even my cat doesn't eat that shit anymore.
Seriously.
It looks like water to me, like a water balloon.
No, it's mealy and it's got no flavor to it.
Well, you know, I said this book
you're just
was,
eating the cruelty of, like, thousands of dead birds.
It's really terrible. I told you this book was written for the Peter Singer... of old, but, you know, also it's written for the Burger King guy, mm-hmm. you know, and a turkey cannot cost, you know, 79 cents a pound.
Right.
And obviously it's a loss leader. You know, a lot of poultry companies have turkeys and they just don't need to make money on it. But mm-hmm. you should be holding that turkey, that 20-pound turkey, to the same standards of McDonald's, mm-hmm. which is you go to McDonald's, you unless you do the dollar meal, you know, you usually spend $5-6. Well, the turkey costs about $7-8 mm-hmm. per person, per portion. So this most important meal, and to argue for the dollar turkey just doesn't make sense. People should then eat a quinoa salad and it be exquisite or something else. But
everything has a place, you know, in the meal.
It just has to cost more.
Right.
Meats have to cost more. Everyone knows it. And those big factory farms should just have to up their prices.
Mm-hmm.
They won't do as much business, but they probably make more profit or the same.
Absolutely. I'm going to cut to a quick little break. I know there's so much more to talk about, but we'll be right back chatting more with Patrick Martins on the Carnivore's Manifesto. Thanks so much, Mike, for being here. You are listening to Kill Me in the Summertime by Dead Stars. This is Eat Your Words on heritageradionetwork.org.
Today's program has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market. Are you a locavore? Our Northeast regional forager for Whole Foods Market sure is. She spends her time traveling around the New York City metro area sourcing the best new or interesting artisanal and handcrafted local products for our purchasing teams at the local store level. Part of our commitment to our local suppliers includes assisting them with the process of getting their products sold at our stores. Whether it's suggesting packaging designs, pricing, or distribution methods, she's helping some of the area's best new products reach savvy shoppers at Whole Foods Market stores. Today, New York. Tomorrow, the world. For more information, visit WholeFoodsMarket.com.
This is Brandon Hoy, co-owner of Roberta's, and you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
All right, we're back chatting more with Mike Itzen and Patrick Martins on the Carnivore's Manifesto. So we were talking a little bit about slaughterhouses and how there's, there could be more of them.
Yes.
You know, everyone says, well, can heritage foods, you know, or slow food support the world? But what are some of the... I guess, you know, we talked a little bit about the challenges, but what are some of the great, like, improvements in that system? Obviously, you run Heritage Foods USA, which is a distributor, so more people can get access even online for Heritage Foods and meats. But have we seen the number of farmers producing this meat grow? Is there a supply, like, increase?
Well, they're all united by, under the umbrella, I think, of gastronomy. Mike and I were always big believers that this is all under the umbrella of gastronomy. And people are starting to seek out eating.
Eating.
It's not like
that's
oil.
That's an elite way of putting
it. But it's very fundamental. I mean, you put it in your mouth. I mean, what could possibly be more personal?
By the way, the greatest gastronomies always come from the poorest people.
Right,
so
right.
So it is absolutely, yeah.
Peasant.
And also, it's yeah, gastronomy... is definitely a thing that needs to be seen more as like a science, a discipline.
Right.
It's not just a style.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually part of cultures and, you know, connects to hunger and, you know, big things, millennia, genetics, you know, are predisposed to want to eat certain foods. And, you know, the stuff runs deep. So,
So there
are many more companies than under that. You know, the whole local butcher scene.
Yes.
The Meat Hook, which just got one star in the New York Times for their sandwich shop. Dixon's, Fleischer's, you know, that exists in New York. I know on the West Coast there are all these butchers. A colleague of mine named Anya Fernald owns Bel Campo or runs Bel Campo. They're a vertically integrated slaughterhouse, farms, and also now retail outlets to make sandwiches and stuff. So this stuff is happening, and I think young people are leaving college and saying,
I want to work in
the I just want to do that one thing like we were talking about earlier in the show, that one thing really well. I'm going to raise goats, or I'm going to make a great goat cheese, or I'm going to make the best hops for a brewery in the city, things like that.
So is that elite, though? I know this is, like, the biggest question.
Patrick,
people should eat this way.
You elitist, Patrick.
You know, it's
funny. Patrick, why aren't you an elitist? Tell us. Why? Why not?
Here's the thing. I get this a lot.
Get off my alligator skin shoes. I swear to God, if you touch them again, Mike.
You know, like, I write a lot about home cooking, and some people accuse that of elitist because they don't have time. And
what
like,
could be less elitist than cooking at home?
I
know. Oh, why?
No, no, no.
You have the luxury to cook at home. That means you got a shop.
Exactly.
Don't you work for a living? Of course.
Right. You have the leisure time. You have a big, beautiful kitchen. You have the time, mostly, is the issue. And it's like, it's not cooking's fault.
But your recipes weren't so complicated.
No. Yeah. And that's, you know, but that's the thing. But, you know,
I'm trying
to debunk the thought that it's very time consuming. But I think just time in itself is seen as an elite thing. I mean, of course, nobody's pointing fingers at TV and saying TV is elite because that sucks up
your
time.
Well, we've learned to micromanage even the smallest segments of time. I go ballistic if I just miss a red light, you know, a green light, a yellow light.
Well, that's where we are now because everything is so hyper-fragmented, in this world we live in, things are flying so fast. But listen, the most valuable resource in the universe is not gold, it's not diamonds, you know, it is time.
Right.
I mean, that is one finite motherfucker. I mean, you're going to run out of it. You will run out of it.
I think that there's now a little bit of a fear to passionately go into leisure. We're always worried about calories. Everything is micromanaged. So I'm just, one of the chapters calls for feasting and just going all out. No, you can get as drunk as you want. Husbands, wives, yes, your loved one will get drunk and plastered and shouldn't, you know, cannot drive home. You have to take the subway. That's good. It has to happen like that every now and then. And yet I think now we're micromanaging everything. And so we're always trying to be the B.
Right.
Not the A or not the C, the B. And I'm arguing for sometimes the A and sometimes the C.
Uh-huh.
You know, and with gastronomy, it comes to that. Sometimes you have to really go out, like you say.
So is there like any like kind of condensed response that you have for when people say this this heritage meat is elitist? You know, is there a way to...
I think there is.
Yeah.
Well, it's just like then you have to look at what else you're arguing for. And the animals that end up being argued for because they're cheaper are, you know, have been fed low doses of antibiotics in their food since they're born. That's really a fact of factory farming. They say no hormones, but almost none of them say no antibiotics.
Mm-hmm.
And why? Why do they need low doses of medicine? It's partially because they never get to see the light of day. They're raised in barns where the lights never get turned off. That's part of it. But also the genetics. They have actually gotten really good at breeding profitable animals. And mm-hmm. some of those animals grow to be unhealthy mm-hmm. and even minorly injured. Like wings are just too fat, and that makes for good profits. But those birds truly suffer on a genetic level. So mm-hmm. I always wondered who we were arguing, you know, and I think that elitist argument kind of presumes that that should be eaten by anybody.
Right.
And the answer is it should be eaten by nobody.
Absolutely. So elitist is like the, I guess that's like just the wrong question or
for
like the
meat,
wrong, it's not
meat.
The bigger issue, right, when it comes to.
For the meat, we should be eating more vegetables.
But also we should be eating more vegetables and we should be eating, you know, better meat, but also people across all socio, you know, economic, you know, everybody in the world should be eating better meat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to advocate for this cheap meat and this agri, you know, this big ag, you know, and factory farm, you know, poison is to say that what poor people eat doesn't matter. That's mm-hmm. that's the elitism.
So we have a little more time left, but we talked about some steps that were made that you guys enjoyed seeing, you know, happening in the last few years. What are some realistic, practical steps that you think could happen and should happen and you would like to see happen in the very near future?
Well, I would like people to listen to that one section that we kind of jokingly put together, which is if you don't shop at five places for your food,
mm-hmm.
you're probably not part of the sustainable food movement.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I would love to see a strengthening of the local ties.
Right.
Also, when a restaurant does do good things, like really great things, sustainable, it tastes good. Also, the meats are really good. Go there often.
Mm-hmm.
You know, new places, that's awesome.
Support them.
Yeah, keep going back to those same places. As we like to say, the bartender will remember the way you like your cocktail.
Yeah.
The waitress will know
you
that
need
you
to have
like
an intimate
sparkling
relationship
water.
With your local, you know, people. Like Patrick
yeah.
says, you can't just eat, you know, at Whole Foods, God forbid, but, you know, or Fairway, whatever. You can't just shop there and think that you're being part of the movement. You really need to go see your baker and your, you know, and your butcher and your fishmonger.
Put yourself
and your produce
in their
guy.
Shoes, yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. and like...
Even
you know,
if it's four blocks extra, that mm-hmm. is the fabric.
That's how you sustain, cool. that's how you sustain this.
Cool.
That's the simplest answer. Support a CSA. You're walking four blocks at a certain time of the week to pick up your thing. That extra effort
and
keeps the acres in play.
And the thing is, you get rewarded with this. I mean,
mm-hmm.
when you know, I have a relationship with... you know, my butcher, I mean, I'm getting better cuts of meat. He knows me.
Right.
You know, I benefit in every possible way when I have a relationship with my bartender. He can see me coming through the door and know exactly what I need.
And then
but
when
also,
you eat it.
You know, I mean, Patrick married his cheesemonger.
Well, your best, I loved, this is, I have to say, Mike played a big part in this. I've said it before. What could be more intimate than putting something in your mouth, whether it's pink like a veal chop or sweet and wet like a domestic vermouth? Be loyal to those who give you the real love, and you will enter a dome of locally sourced pleasure that Coleridge could have only dreamed of.
That's fantastic.
Wow,
that's
that
poetry.
Was, I wrote that? That was good.
That was really good.
I swear I didn't get paid enough.
Well,
that
fortunately,
whole book is like that. All the
yeah.
chapters are 2 pages long, 3 pages long, and my wife did some beautiful drawings in it.
It is really an amazing book.
And there's a quote on top of each chapter.
Yep.
And Mike really found that out. So I'm going to pull one out and hope that it's not easy
okay, let's
being
end,
green.
Let's try to pick a really good one to
yeah,
end off with. These are very astute, though. There's Walt Whitman.
If you are what you eat, then you're fast, cheap, and easy.
How many bacon, egg, and cheeses did you have today, Patrick?
And you know, fortunately, these steps are things that I enjoy personally, you know, getting to know my makers and
mm-hmm. Of course.
I can't see why anyone wouldn't.
It's more pleasurable, and there's mm-hmm. a huge pleasure component in this. I mean, this is not just to assuage some sort of liberal
Ooh.
Guilt we have. I mean,
mm-hmm.
your life will actually be better if you do these things.
Kathy, I picked one, too. Let's
okay,
see if we pick
one?
The same one.
Okay. Action is the foundational key to all success. Pablo
Ooh.
Picasso.
Very nice. I picked a Churchill one. We make a living by what we get, but we make a life by what we give.
Ooh.
Give your small producer four extra blocks
right.
on foot, and you will be happy.
Well, time flies like an arrow.
And
fruit flies like a banana.
Wait. We cannot end there, guys. We got way too much going on. This is your executive director, Aaron Fairbanks.
Hello, Aaron. Hi, it's me, Mike.
I couldn't help. You guys were painting such a lovely picture of ways to make the food system and our world and our lives better. And I wanted to jump in because we are in the midst of a Kickstarter campaign right now to rebuild the website.
She's not canceling the main course. Thank God.
Eat Your Words, main course. You guys are safe. No worries there.
Arts and Seizure, not so much.
Oh, she didn't say it about you. Sorry, Mike.
Arts and Seizures, I'm saving something very special for you coming up next. Oh. So definitely stay tuned for that. But I wanted
We have wrestlers on our show today, Aaron, and that should bring in a lot of dough.
Pizza dough. They're very hungry.
In fact, I'm gonna go babysit some professional wrestlers right now. I'll see you guys in 20 minutes back here at Arts
and
Seizures.
We'll
Patrick, you're coming back.
All right.
Patrick's going to join me in 20 minutes at Arts and Seizures. Kathy, thank you very much.
Thanks so much, Mike.
Okay. Now, Aaron, I mean, you may continue.
What's with the new website Kickstarter?
All right. So, well, if you visit our website before, you might have been frustrated by trying to find shows with all the great authors that Kathy's had on. And so one of our goals with the redesign is to make the stuff you want to find easier, to do a better job of letting Kathy give you more of the great stuff she's got going on. You might not know she just published a book. And on the new website, you'll be able to visit her host page and get all the lowdown and the great project that she's doing. And you can support the Kickstarter. Just visit our website, www.heritageradionetwork.org. There's a link on the right side. 100% of the funds that you donate to the Kickstarter will be used for the website rebuild. So you're really investing in yourself and in the future of great food media. So I want to give it a shout for that and say thanks for the great show, guys.
You know, I have to say, heard that thing from Aaron, that hosts would have their own page, and like my best website for me is going to be on HRN. I thought that was really...
That's awesome.
I felt empowered as a host, or co-host of the main course. I was just like... That's awesome, and that they'll help curate it and produce it. Like, I just feel honored to be a part of it.
That's awesome. I can't wait. Do support that campaign. A little bit. Any bit helps, and check it out. Tell your friends, too. Thanks so much, Patrick. Thanks, everyone at Heritage. And check out the Carnivore's Manifesto. Get your hands on this great book. We'll see you next week on Eat Your Words.
Ooh, I like the way you do. Whoa, the way you took it so.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.